during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Save more on the brands you trust to deliver on the job. Right now, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 8-amp-hour battery when you buy a DeWalt 10-inch 20-volt max dual bevel compound miter saw. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances. Save even more on what you need to keep the job moving. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The 100%. Same day a park ranger pulled Nolan's body from the water, the sheriff was already telling the public no foul play was suspected before the autopsy, before toxicology, before almost anything. Whatever trust this investigation had, it cracked right there. Two autopsies sit unreleased. An independent team is digging through his phone and a grand jury is waiting. And when investigators told Nolan's parents it was most likely an accidental drowning, his mother asked the same question you did. Why are we so quick to rush this? Yeah, I think... What I wonder about with this case is half the problem occurring after the fact. People in places of power where words matter saying stupid shit. And I mean, that seems to be where, you know, a lot of it's already, you know, this is just tinder waiting to be lit. And when you're in the pack of tinder and you are potentially a match, you got to be careful with where you stick your head towards the sun or towards a source of heat. And when you say shit like no foul play expected out of the gate without an autopsy done, that might ignite the whole pile, which I think it did. Now, does that mean when somebody says something stupid like that, that then the entire apparatus of people that would be part of that conversation, does that mean that narrative is then immediately true? No, it means somebody said something really stupid, right, that doesn't necessarily match up with reality and should be judged strictly on the person who said it, why they said it, how they said it, and the answer might just be ignorance. What's your take on the sheriff? Because obviously a lot of people are still making a big deal about that. You know, the sheriff hasn't continued seemingly to go down this road.
Right.
So it seemed to be, I don't know if say deviation, but it wasn't like he continued to dig in the way Nanos has over in Guthrie. It was like, okay, never addressed saying kind of stupid shit, but also didn't continue to say stupid shit either.
Yeah. Even from day one, anytime I do research on a case, I research everyone involved in a case, the victim's family, the friends around them, and as well as the investigators. And so I said this on day one and two and ever since, you know, I did a deeper research as much as you can online about the sheriff. He went to National Academy. He does not have a bad reputation. He's got a lot of good, non-Nanos traits, we'll say,
yes.
In him. And so then you got to look at, all right, so what's the intent of what he said? What's the impact of what he said? And how did he come to that conclusion? What inspired that person to say these things that like you said, it lit a tinderbox. And I believe unintentionally, because people don't want things to get worse, because he made things more challenging for him and his investigators by doing that. And so what do I think the intent was? Behaviorally, based on his arc of his career, I think the intent was to calm nerves from the onset because he's seen these things go sideways. Unintentionally, not knowing that he's going to make it worse by saying it that fast.
Yeah.
Now, then what drew him to make a statement like that? Years of law enforcement, years of talking to people, doing interviews, seeing these types of things play out in the past. My guess, again, pure guess, pure conjecture, is that when he first talked to the people involved, the teenagers, everyone involved, his, I won't say gut instinct because guts are just emotions, but I think his inclination because of his experience, his first impression was that this is not foul play because of I didn't see all the things we've been talking about. He didn't see the data supported foul play. Now, what did he should have done? Hold that opinion and see if in the days doing the investigation that theory of his personal theory would play out. I think he was quick to the gun because he's trying to calm, the sentiment on this one, but wound up inflaming it by mistake. And that's why he's not doubling down on it. He's just being silent. He's like, whoop. Not so in my mind, there's nothing else he could say to make it right except shutting up. And so again, I always in situations like this, when again, if you've never dealt with a situation this big, when it's not just a loss of life, but a lot of other factors in play, and your public relations person that you have in your department doesn't have experience in at that level either. I mean, they train for this at National Academy, believe it. They train their sheriffs, they train their executives on how to deal with situations like this. And when they get a bloop, the next thing you're watching is what do they do in response to saying something that really fanned the flames or threw kerosene on the fire. And so far, he hasn't doubled down on stupid like Thanos did so far.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, and look, people are human. They're going to say things that, are not intentional. They should be more measured, but it is what it is. That's what you get when you have humans involved in things, and we happen to be humans. So that tends to be the track that goes down.
You very well might have had a loving critic to bounce this off of, but if your loving critic has no reps in this either, you're kind of flying blind, and I think that's what might have happened.
Let's talk about the phone for a second, because that's another big thing people are very critical of, because, well, Ben Crump has made it a big deal. And has positioned it as something very suspicious. And look, investigate it. Go to Snapchat, find out if things were actually deleted. And if the answer is yes, you got some reason to ask more questions without a freaking doubt. But we don't have that right now. We have conjecture. We have a parent who says he takes photos all the time. He's always doing this. It's really weird that he wasn't using his phone then. Okay, if I were a parent and I knew that about my kid, I would probably feel that way too. But then you have every other child out there from other boats and anybody who's out on the water or goes out on the water on a regular basis that has nothing to do with this case, never met these people, not even in the same vicinity. I've heard over and over again, a lot of times people just leave their phones on the boat because they don't want their $1,500 hand computer getting destroyed or lost. Mm-hmm. I was just out on a boat a couple weeks ago. You know what my initial thought was? I'm going to get a lot of really fun shots out here in the water. And then we're about to go in and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to leave it on the boat. And so did everyone else. Yep. And this is a common occurrence on boats. If you've not been out on a boat in the water, jumping in the water, where you have the option to take your phone. You could also very easily lose it. And you're going to be sitting there like this the whole time, not actually enjoying your time in the water. You may leave the phone on the boat. And if it turns out that all the other friends left their phones on the boat, which they claim they did, and his is there, that's not incongruent with the rest of the group. That's him doing exactly what the rest of the group was doing. And it's not that impossible then to think that maybe his phone was still on the boat when they left. And if he was not getting on the boat, that they left without the phone.
I've done it.
Should it be investigated? Without a doubt.
Yep.
But is it... is it a far-fetched, tall tale, sci-fi horror story that this is an impossibility that he could not possibly have left his phone on the boat and not taken it in the water with him?
It's reasonable. So
Completely reasonable.
And that's what you got. You know, every time you do an investigation, you got to go for the simplest explanation first. And is that explanation reasonable for the situation? And you, if you don't have personal experience or data doing something like that, you go to people that have. I have done this exact same thing. You've done this exact same thing. You know, so one of the questions I'd be asking is, I love the idea. Every time you come up with, and even with social media, if people come up with these wild theories, all right, ask questions to flush that out. That's what we do here. I love flushing out all these things because then it helps people critically think through anything so you can actually come back to center again. And so one of the questions I'd be asking is, what kind of cell phone case did he have? I have this one, which I wear around as a wallet, and I have one when I go walking in the rain. I actually switch out my cell phone to a waterproof one when I'm actually going to do something different. If I'm going backpacking, I got a separate one for that. So I'd be asking that question. From everything we understand, a group of people left their cell phones on the boat. That's completely reasonable because we heard there's very limited to bad cell phone reception. They're going to be involved in a lot of things. If you're running around shirtless and shorts, sand everywhere, you don't want to get in your electronics. Are you going to have it on you? Are you going to leave it someplace? Because you all agree this is we're going to leak our cell phones. And when a boat takes off and you're having a good time, maybe having some sort of beverage, whether it's adult beverage or not, you're not necessarily immediately thinking about that. All these things to me are reasonable and not a wobble yet.
And I want to address this because somebody here said these are middle-aged men referring to us. Kids are keeping their phones close. I don't care where they are. That's a fact. No, it's not at all. Not remotely. When's the last time you were out in the water with a bunch of people of that age? I was out with family and there was teenagers recently. There's tons of teenagers who have spoken up about this exact same thing, saying this is what they do. So no, I'm sorry, you're simply wrong. That is not a fact.
My kids do this very thing. Matter of fact, my daughter is a little bit older than he is. Her new husband, they got a lake house down in Southern Virginia from their family that they go to. They do what they just did is exactly what my daughter and her husband do too.
So. They do. I mean, and I'm sorry, these kids are out in number one, they're in a spot that has no signal. So you're not using Snapchat, which I also found to be kind of an interesting point too, where, you know, they say the family did get the phone and they looked at Snapchat within 24 hours and there was nothing there. Okay. Look at it, dig into Snapchat, get to Snapchat, find out what the hell happened. But it's not, if there's no signal, you're not posting anything to Snapchat.
But that's what period of time either.
And
then explore it. You know, it's like, hey, not dismissing it, saying, all right, if you think it's, then this is what they're asking in the interviews.
Yes, look
that's
at
why
it.
You do the interviews.
Yes, exactly. Like, examine it. But all the kids are also going, nobody has signal out here, which they don't. I don't want to lose my phone because I'm going to have a drink in one hand and I'm going to be playing in the water. So you want to be like this the whole time? No, I mean, and if you look it up, probably a lot of people don't have their phones in their hands. Again, this is just normal. This is not abnormal behavior out there in the water, on the sandbar, in a place like this. It is not. Anyone who thinks it is simply hasn't lived it, hasn't been there. And it's fine to think that it's crazy for a teenager not to have the phone in hand. I would think so too, but there are certain scenarios, this happens to be one of them, where that would likely occur, where you would have the deviation from them sitting at home or wherever they are with their phone attached to their body surgically.
And it doesn't matter what we think anyway. That's what the interviews are for. That's why you interview them.
Exactly.
And they all said in an interview that they put them on the boat. Okay.
Yeah.
And if everyone's saying the same thing and they're separated during the interviews, that's congruent and it's not a wobble. It's reasonable. Everything comes down reasonable. Is it a reasonable explanation? So far, but that's why we keep interviewing. We keep investigating. We see what the autopsy says. We see what the data says. Because people say there's no cell phone. I'd be out there because law enforcement's out there testing cell phone pings because I guarantee you they're doing that because they want to identify as many people out there as possible to see what cell phones are associated with what people to make sure they did interview someone. Because if there's a gap, in other words, say they interviewed 60 people, but you have 61 cell phones that are registered that are coming in on a cell tower that we're doing that moment, you know, periodic pinging, right? You really think that law enforcement is not going to find out that 61st person, because that one person might have all the information they need. So that's what I guarantee any good law enforcement that's not trying to cover something up will do.
Well, I also wanted to run through his cell phone being on the boat, going back to the house. because that's being looked at as rather suspicious as well. And I get the angle. I get how you could look at that, especially if you're the parent. Like, what the hell's going on? If all those friends thought that this is before they knew anything had happened, before they knew he was like missing and all that. And if you're driving back and you see your friend's phone on the boat, oh shit, he forgot his phone. Well, let's give it back to him when we see him next time. That's the end of that thought. It's like, okay, well, when we catch back up with him on shore, we get it. It's not necessarily super nefarious, exactly. You know, they look it up, they find it. I don't think there's really no evidence anyone was trying to hide this phone. The second they located where it was, they got it to the parents. Mm-hmm. Nobody like destroyed the phone. Nobody crushed the phone. Nobody threw it into the ocean, which might have been probably the easiest way to lose the phone. They had the best option, you know, of all the places you could dispose of something never to find it again. They had the opportunity if they really wanted to. They didn't take it because if there's nothing nefarious going on here, their thought was probably next time we see Nolan, we're going to give him his phone back.
Yeah. And if you think about it too, if you go back to the argument of teenagers always have their cell phones with them. Well, obviously not, because if he did, he would have drowned with a cell phone and we never would have got it.
Yeah.
Or would have gone waterlogged. So, I mean, that's part of the questions you ask when you're interviewing someone is like, all right, when did you realize you had a cell phone? He didn't have it. And what actions did you take and what time did you take them? And then when they give you their timeline of what they did, when they give back to the parents, you're collaborating that information with what the parents say. Again, is everyone being congruent? Because what you're always doing as an interviewer, you're looking for open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability. Those are the three signs of trust I'm looking for. I'm looking for behavioral congruence between words, actions, and deeds. I'm looking for transparency and maintaining the same tempo of transparency when I ask you a further question, a follow-on question, a more probing question. I'm looking for that same level, and that's what good interviewers and investigators are doing. And so far, from what we're seeing on the outside, from what's being reported, I'm still not seeing wobbles yet, but maybe there are there, but yeah. That's what investigators are finding out. But that's exactly what they're doing right now.
I want to touch on this other one I just saw in the comments section, because I just talked about it. I just did a piece on this, breaking down the timeline of this case, which you can watch here later today as we post it. If you're a member on our YouTube, it drops tomorrow for free. The dad's account of him retrieving the phone keys was interesting. He felt they were being deceptive. At first, they say they can't find it. That was the keys they couldn't find initially. The phone, they apparently gave right up. And I read that account, and it basically, the dad's, through conjecture, basically it was reiterating to whoever made the statement that he felt like there was deception going on there. Look, if my kid was missing and all these friends who I trusted, you know, him to be around for all this time don't know anything, I would feel they were being deceptive too, whether they were or not, quite honestly. I'd be feeling deception from any human being at that moment in time because I don't know where my kid is. So I don't blame him one iota for feeling like maybe there's deception going on, because you're going to be looking for that. You're going to be suspicious. So I get that. But again, a feeling is not a fact. And it doesn't matter how close you are to the victim or not. Feelings are not facts. It is what it is. It's understandable why he has those feelings. I don't blame him. I think most of us would feel the same way, especially if you're freaking out, your son's missing, and you got some flippant teenagers that are just kind of like, I don't know. They also probably don't understand the gravity of the situation at that moment either. The keys were an interesting thing, but again, I also was like, would this feel different if this kid weren't missing? Because initially they said they couldn't find Nolan's keys. And the boys didn't know where the keys were, but one of the girls said, I think they're on the Xbox. Boom, they're on the Xbox. Right. So you have a group of teenage boys that doesn't know where their friend set his own keys. And one of the girls is the one that goes, oh, I saw him on the Xbox. How is that not a regular Tuesday with a bunch of 18, 19-year-olds if a parent is coming to somehow retrieve the keys of their son who's not there to tell them where they are? That seems about par for the course of any 18, 19-year-olds of any race and color, that would be how it would go. The girl paid attention. She saw the keys. The guys, I don't know where they're at. That doesn't read to me as super suspicious. But I get, again, from the dad's perspective, everything looks suspicious.
Right.
And rightfully so.
And to into what Humble Beginnings said too, into what you're saying, Tony. So the dad has a feeling and emotion, and I never dismiss feelings and emotions because they're generally created by data, experience. Yeah. And so what I'd be exploring now, so the dad says they seem deceptive. So the next question an interviewer and investigator asks is, all right, so what makes you say that? A what question, not why, a what. You know, has one of the kids involved in your son's life given you reason to not believe him ever? In other words, I'm going to look for data points to say whether this came from this emotion you have about deception and the strife and horrible trauma you're going through. Is that emotion you're having caused from data you've collected from his group of friends over the years? Or is it something that you've seen from society? Is it an experience that you had growing up? In other words, I need to differentiate where that your emotions coming from. Is it coming from something you saw in that group of friends that gave you reason to pause in this instant as well because they have an arc of behavior? Or is it coming from something else in your life, like this horrendous situation you're going through?
Yeah. And a cacophony of people trying to attach themselves to you going,
yes.
Well, it's this. It must be this. I can get you all this attention. That to me feels very predatory on a family in grief.
Yeah, and because, what you don't want is someone feeding him ideas that aren't original. But that's why, good investigators, very empathetic, caring ones that are doing these interviews that are very, very skilled with, again, I'm hoping they are, and they most likely are, dealing with people that are going through severe trauma right now, is you're helping them move through theories and conjectures and what people are feeding them as thoughts and ideas and move into, the areas of facts that the investigators can work through. Because you're not going to ever dismiss what the parents are saying, but it'll help you as an investigator create filters. All right, I need to pay attention to this or not pay attention here, move over here. And so that's why just asking, so what makes you say that about these kids? And or in this moment, was it something the kids have done in the past? Was there one friend in particular that gave you a wobble? And give me an exact example. Because you're going to need some data in order to drill deeper. Very specific. Not, like you said, not the emotion of it. Emotions are caused by actions. I need you to tell me the action that was taken. Was it taken over here or was it taken over here? Because if it's over here, I don't need to pay attention to this.
Yeah. Feelings are not facts. Right. Everyone is certainly entitled to them, but they are just that. It's heartbreaking all around. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd be out of my freaking mind if I were that dad right now. He's acting far more, competent. I think I'd be in a corner shaking. I think. I mean, I don't know. I would. I can't imagine. I can't freaking imagine. So I'm not casting judgment at all on them, but I am just trying to look at this from a middle of the road perspective. Could it be this? Could it be that? We don't know the answer to any of this yet. But let's not jump down all of the roads of conjecture and attach our boats to them, no pun intended. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to follow this wherever it will go.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Nolan Wells. The timeline. The complete timeline as we know it right now. That is what we are about to embark upon going through. Because there's a lot of information out there and misinformation out there and opinions out there. Let's work our way through it, shall we? And as we do, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. A GPS unit does not have a story to protect. It doesn't get nervous. It doesn't lawyer up. It doesn't quietly revise what it recorded once it finds out somebody died. On July 4th, a boat pulled off a private dock in the Ocean Springs area at 9:56 in the morning. It hit Horn Island at 11:14. That's Mississippi Department of Marine Records data obtained by CBS News, and nobody's disputed a second of it so far. Just about everything else from that day seems to be up for grabs. The night before, there's no data log. There's a kitchen. On July 3rd, Nolan Wells cooked dinner for his parents, according to his mother, Christine Wansley. He was 18, 6 foot one, a wide receiver who'd signed with Southwest Mississippi Community College. He told her he was heading out. He said he loved her, gave her a kiss and a hug, and left for a friend's house where he was spending the night. Wansley says that's the last time she heard from her son. He drove himself over. His car stayed at that house, set at his keys. Horn Island sits about 10 miles off the Mississippi coast, south of Ocean Springs. It's federally protected land inside the Gulf Islands National Seashore. There's no shelter out there, no drinking water, no staff, no way to react if something goes wrong with any sort of official capacity on hand like that, and no way to reach it except by private boat. On the 4th of July, it is packed. Tristan Shepard, a longtime friend of Nolan's, who was out there that day, told ABC News that multiple boats carrying their friends came in that morning and that the group had been drinking since late morning. Shepard described roughly 300 people crowded onto their stretch of island, a lot of them former Ocean Springs High classmates. He called it one of the last hurrahs before everybody went back to school or work. Shepard also explained what happened to everybody's phone, and it turns out one of the loudest fights here is about the phones. He said Nolan set his phone on the dash of a friend's boat next to maybe 15 others. Nobody was texting. Everybody was in the salt water, according to the friend. Around 3 in the afternoon is where the record goes soft. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office says Nolan was last seen near the island around 3. His friends say the same. Ashley Cole, a Jackson County judge, and the stepmother of Warren, one of the boys on the boat, said her stepson last saw Nolan around 3. Mississippi Today reported that witnesses told authorities 3 or 4. Nobody at a beach party is checking a watch, so a little slack there is going to be normal. What isn't normal is what happens to the story at that exact hour. Okay? Two accounts exist for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat. And before we get there, let's talk about the phones for just a second here, because that is a big point of contention in this entire story. And it's understandable. If your mom, and you know Nolan uses his phone all the time and documents all portions of his life, as so many people do, to see a gap in that window, especially at an event where there's a lot of people around where normally you would be taking, or you would think one would be taking photos, and it's dead and there's nothing there on that Snapchat, you're going to look at that, you're going to go, God, this looks like it was deleted. That'd be my initial reaction. But I think it's important to look at the context here. People on a boat, everyone's saying their phone is on the boat. Everybody's saying nobody's using their phone out in the water. Well, then that gap is fairly explainable. I guess it should be tested, though, to see if that is in fact true against everybody else's phone. Is everybody else's phone on that boat at the exact same place where Nolan's was? That could be looked at. That could be tracked with GPS data. That could be tracked with the phone data if they are to compare other people's phones. I'm not saying it's true this way or that, but I'm saying there's your logical explanation as to why there may not be anything on his phone for a gap of time leading up to his death. Not necessarily things deleted, but a phone not being in use because he was in an environment in which you wouldn't be using your phone. Just saying. I'm not saying I know that for a fact, but I'm saying that is a plausible explanation. A very plausible explanation and researchable, verifiable. See if it's the trend with everyone else. If that story, in fact, adds up. And if it does add up, well, then that's what it is. If it doesn't, if it turns out everybody else is out there with their phones and he's the only one who doesn't have it, then that's a little odd if he's a guy who likes to use his phone. But again, this is a point in the story where I'm saying we just don't know. And a conjecture out of one area, making a statement saying this is what he normally does, okay, I get where you're coming from. I get where the pattern would be off. But sometimes patterns do go off. Sometimes there are deviations in behavior, and that might be very explainable. It might be. Might. Not saying it is, saying it might. And again, with this case, I'm not going down any road here of it's all this or it's all that until we actually have information, which we don't as of this recording. That's why we're going through the timeline right now. But I think that's important. What are your thoughts about the phone and where that's all at? Tell me in the comments section. Is it very plausible that that's all it is? Or is that not accurate? Is that not true? Is that not a possibility? Tell me why. Tell me why you think so. In our comments section on Substack and YouTube, those links are in the description. Two accounts exist for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat, and they can't both necessarily be true. But again, lots of moving thoughts in the moment of all this going on, where maybe they can, maybe two versions of this were said. Maybe you have a man in the middle who's fighting with the idea of going off with his girl that he met, telling his friends, I'm going to catch a ride back with somebody else. I'll figure it out. All right, man. Well, he wouldn't do that. You know, he's a good boy. He would never, we've always told him not to do that. Yeah, well, you know what? You say, I'm a parent too. You can expect certain things of your kids, and your kids can go completely off the rails, especially a teenage boy that is seeing an attractive woman that he wants to chat with. Rules sometimes go out the window in terms of, I'm going to go back with my friends. They were like, it's plausible. It's also plausible that he did tell the girl. Maybe he changed his mind. I'm going to go back with my friends. He goes back, the boat's gone. There are plausible directions for all of this that don't lead to necessarily murder. What those are, what that is, again, we just don't know. But there are so many possible roads here of things happening in real time and decisions being made, and nobody's thinking anything horrible is going to happen other than maybe you got to get a ride back on a boat with some people you don't necessarily know that well. I don't know. That might be a question to ask too. Did he get on somebody else's boat? Not the friends. Not the ones with the bilge pump that went out. Maybe it is true. He did tell them, hey, I'm going to go hang out with this girl here. I'll get a ride back later. Did he end up with some people that we don't necessarily know about yet? That aren't this group of friends? Because this group of friends, I'm sorry, this circle does not appear to be a nefarious, you know, race-baiting, hateful, you know, nefarious group to this young man. They appear to all get along very well, no matter what color your skin, ethnicity, sexual preference, insert whatever diversity here. The friends say they're all a big, diverse group of friends. Doesn't appear to be, you know, the clan out for a boat ride at all. But it's interesting how some areas of the internet seem to contextualize it that way, even though there's like no evidence to that at all as of right now. Again, I'm saying I'm open to all possibilities here, but I'm saying not going to jump through the hoop that someone wants to jump through over here because they're collecting a big payday and a lot of attention on it. If they go, look at me, we're doing this. Okay, great. Well, we don't have facts on anything yet. I would be more curious about another boat, about another group of people, if there's anything nefarious going on here, or a riptide, or a riptide. But two accounts for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat exist. The friend's version, relayed by the sheriff, by Cole, by Shepard, is that he chose to stay because he'd met a young woman that day and planned to catch a ride back with another boat. Ben Crump, the civil rights attorney the family retained on July 7th, says the young woman tells it differently. According to Crump, she says Nolan told her he was going to go back to the boat with the guys.
One of them is telling the truth, Crumb said. One is not. Or maybe they both are. That's what he told both of them, and he got caught in the middle, changing his mind. I don't know. I mean, there are possibilities there. Then there's a timestamp that didn't surface publicly until long after everybody's minds were already made up. Around 4 in the afternoon, the operator of that boat called a private towing company. Audio obtained by NBC News and later aired on ABC has him saying they're at the has him apparently saying they're at the west tip of Horn. The bilge pump quit and the boat is sinking. The dispatcher asks if everyone on the boat is in good health. The caller says everyone's on board. That call changes the shape of the afternoon. It doesn't tell you where Nolan was. It does establish independently that the people on the boat had a mechanical emergency inside the same window they say they last saw him. They weren't idling at a sandbar making a cold decision. They apparently were sinking. The GPS picks it back up from there. The boat left the island at 4:31. Reporting citing GPS and emergency records says it got towed several miles before it ran right again. It moved into Fort Bayou around 5:52 and reached the dock at 6:06. At 7:19 that evening, it went to the Fort Bayou boat launch, came out of the water, and traveled overland to its owner's home in Biloxi. Every one of those numbers is on paper. That leaves an hour and a half. Nobody can Phil. He was last seen around 3. The distress call went out around 4. The boat was gone at 4:31. Crumps asked the obvious question out loud, where was Nolan for that hour? There's no public answer to it. Doesn't appear he was on the boat. That seems to be fairly well-established fact. He wasn't on the boat. Not from the sheriff, not from the friends, not from Crumps' own investigators. He was somewhere, but he wasn't on the boat. The next documented moment lands at 11 that night. The U.S. Coast Guard confirmed to WLOX that a friend of Nolan's contacted the agency around 11 p.m. on July 4th. The Coast Guard wouldn't say anything else about that call except that it didn't require Coast Guard assistance. That I find interesting. Didn't require Coast Guard. Love to hear that call. 7 minutes later, at 11:07, Christine Wansley's phone rang. It was Warren calling from the mainland. She hadn't detailed what he said. She called a friend whose two sons are close with Nolan and asked if they'd seen him. They hadn't, but they pulled up his Snapchat location. Wansley pulled up his Life 360. The two apps disagreed. Life 360 put his phone back on land. Around midnight, she started calling law enforcement. What she got was back and forth between agencies over who owned a missing person case on an island sitting out in the Mississippi Sound. An 18-year-old was unaccounted for on a barrier island in the dark. And the live question was whose paperwork it was. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office eventually opened a report. Nolan's parents met a deputy at a McDonald's parking lot and told him everything they knew. And then came the retrieval. A friend of Christine's went to get Nolan's phone from the house where his friends were. Wansley said there were issues. She said she got a parent on the phone and spelled it out, that she was Nolan's mother, that they needed his phone, that they were trying to find him. Elmore Wansley went for the car keys at the other house, the one where Nolan slept the night of July 3rd. He said the boys there told him they didn't know where the keys were. That held until a girl who'd been at the house earlier said over the phone that Nolan left them on top of the Xbox. Elmer called the situation tense. He said he felt like he was lied to. He said once he had the keys, the people inside locked everything and wanted nothing to do with what was outside that door. That's conjecture. That's feeling. Could it be nothing more than he put his keys on the Xbox and the girl is the only girl, is the only one who noticed? I don't know. Seems rather plausible to me. Take all the drama out of the situation. Where's his keys? He's not there. Most of the guys, I don't know. That seems about normal for most teenage boys or men. And the girl's like, oh, I saw him on the Xbox. Okay. And you're a parent, you're like, where's my son? You may be thinking everyone feels a little suspicious at this moment in time, whether they are or not. That's not a knock on the parents. That's understanding human behavior. I would probably be doing the same thing. What do you mean you don't need? You left without your friend and like this is okay? Like what the hell is wrong with you? I'll tell you what's wrong with them. They're teenagers. They make bad decisions. They're kind of known for that. If you haven't been playing along with what teenagers are like at home, let me introduce you to that fine world. They're idiots. I was, you were, we all were at that point in time. And these kids are no different. You make bad decisions. You make bad choices. You just do. Because you're young and you're dumb and you're inexperienced and you've never really been in a situation where, well, my friend said they were going to go do this. Okay, I'll trust him. You're not like, no, dude, let's really get back. It could be a mess if you don't know where you're at. Nobody has the foresight because they've never been in life situations before. Unfortunately, they're entering real life, the real world, with quite a trauma on their hands. But I'm sorry, in my opinion, none of their behavior as of this moment looks all that extremely suspicious. It looks like idiot teenagers who were not expecting anything like this to be happening around them because they were just living their normal dumbass teenage lives. Self-centered, focusing on oneself, not much of the external world around you. And shit went horribly sideways. Not knowing information can look like conspiracy. Conflicting reports can look like conspiracy. And look, it could be something nefarious. It very well could be. But I'm not feeling this is to be a glaring red sign here that is being made out to be at this moment in time. Is there a possibility? Yes, we are open to that. We will follow it if it goes that way. But I'm sorry, because someone says and someone feels that the girl knew where the keys were on the Xbox and the boys did it. Well, that kind of just sounds pretty freaking normal to me, honest to God. You put them on the Xbox, the girl noticed. Okay. Show me how that's... I don't know. If there's more to this that we are not hearing about, if there's more to this of why he was feeling this is, might be suspicious, I'd love to hear it and absorb that and take that into account. But just a feeling at that moment in time when you're already going to be on edge, I get it. You're going to feel suspicious. You're going to feel suspicious of the guy at McDonald's drive-thru if you go through it. Were you there that day? What did you, I mean, you just would. I'm not faulting him, but I'm also saying feelings are not fact. That's important, especially on a case like this. When the phone came back, Christine and her sister went through it. She said there were no photos and no saved snaps from that day, and maybe that was explainable like we talked about earlier. And they opened it inside the 24-hour window of Snapchat. Okay. She said that's not how her son operated at a social gathering, that he documented everything. The family believes something got deleted. I understand. I get it. I understand that, too. But again, if everybody's put their phones on the boat and they're all in the water and they're not using their phones, and this is pretty much the consensual story of everyone there, friends and not friends, people who know him, people who don't know him, people who are on other boats have nothing to do with the party. And everybody's like, yeah, people don't typically use their phones out there. They're on the boats. That's what they do because they don't want to risk their $1,500 mini computer getting destroyed in the water while everybody's drinking on the island. I don't know. I was out on a boat recently, I left my phone on the boat, and pretty much everyone else did too. This is not abnormal behavior when you're out there on a boat. I guess when's the last time his mom and dad were out on a boat doing this? And what did they do with their phones? Not just what you think one would do, but what the people actually do in those situations. My initial thought would be, I'm going to take a bunch of photos here. I thought that not that long ago when I was out on a boat and I got into the water. I'm like, nah, I'm going to leave it up there. I'm just going to enjoy the day. I'm going to enjoy this. I don't need to document. I don't need to take pictures of it. I'm good. I'm good. But that's me. That's nothing to do with the case. But I'm saying that's how people act on boats. That's what people sometimes do in situations like this. And it's well documented. I mean, again, it doesn't read as super off. The family, though, believes something got deleted, and maybe it did. Snapchat can answer that, and we will get that answer very soon, and once we do, that will lead into whatever direction it leads, and we'll follow it that way. Until then, it's this conjecture. It's not that my conjecture weighs more than yours. It's just I'm telling you from my experience, from my prism, as everyone else is talking from their prism, that's how I'm seeing that portion. Shepherd's counter is that hardly any photos exist from that day from anybody because everyone was in the water and nobody was on a phone. On the morning of July 5th, Elmore Wansley got on a boat with Nolan's football coach. He went out to Horn Island himself. He walked the island. He got back in the boat and circled it. He went to the stretch of water where his son's body would later wash up. He saw nothing. He also described what he did see out there. A family had camped overnight on the island. Two other boats were docked. His point was that if Nolan had been stranded, there were people right there who could have helped him. But was he stranded? Or was he caught in a riptide for some reason and ended up washing back up after? At 12:26 at afternoon, Coast Guard Sector Mobile got a request for assistance from the sheriff's office. An urgent marine information broadcast went out and a helicopter launched. That's roughly 13 hours after a friend of Nolan's called the Coast Guard and got told the situation didn't require their help. That right there, the Coast Guard thing, not necessarily that they had anything to do with the boy's disappearance, but I'm sorry when you're calling for help and someone's missing and you're the fucking Coast Guard. Maybe you go look. You don't wait 13 hours in an environment with known riptides and hundreds of deaths that have occurred there in the past. Just a fucking thought. Both of those calls can be defended somewhat. A late night report that an adult didn't come back from an island where people camp overnight. Maybe the Coast Guard looked at it that way. Well, maybe he's out with friends. Maybe we don't need to do search and rescue. I don't know. Maybe you should have, though. But a parent who hears no assistance required at 11 at night hears something else entirely. Both readings are somewhat reasonable. Only one of them that belongs to a family whose son was already gone. 5 minutes after the request went in at 12:31, the sheriff's office issued a missing person release. 18-year-old black male, roughly 6'1", 180 pounds, last seen on Horn Island on Saturday, July 4th, in blue swim trunks, no shirt, sunglasses. A command post went up at the Lake Mars boat launch at 5:54 that evening. By then, the search had pulled in the National Park Service, Gulf Islands National Seashore, the Coast Guard, and the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources. The Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks came in, along with the Biloxi Fire Department, the Harrison County Sheriff's Office, Jackson County Fire Service, and the United Cajun Navy. Few folks went out and looked. Cajun Navy aircraft went up just before 6 in the morning on July 6. The last search vessels pushed off just before 8. At around 8:45, a U.S. Park Service ranger found a body in the water at the northwest tip of Horn Island just after 11. The family was taken to the coroner's office. Just before 1 o'clock, Christine Wansley posted on Facebook that the person they found was her son. Jackson County Coroner Bruce Lynn told CNN there was no immediate signs of physical injury. He said the swimsuit matched what Nolan was wearing. In the last photograph of him, he also said his office asked for the autopsy to be done at the state medical examiner's lab because of the condition the body was in and to nail down definitively whether there was trauma or foul play. That same day, the sheriff, again, another misstep, said no foul play was suspected. Those two statements aren't technically at war with each other. One office was saying it didn't see anything obvious. The other was saying it wanted the state lab precisely because obvious isn't good enough. Put both of those on the internet the same afternoon and see which one people hear. They clearly heard the one. And not a great choice of words at all from that sheriff. Like, just words matter. Words matter. Crumbs pressed hard on where and when the body turned up. His argument is that if Nolan went into the water Saturday, he should have been found Sunday, not Monday, and that Elmore had already searched that exact stretch. Apparently, Crump doesn't understand how currents and tides and oceans work at all. He understands one thing, how to get people really upset based on incomplete information. He's good at that. doesn't make it fact. The counter comes from the coroner. Lynn told CNN the currents are strong out there, especially at the end of the island, and that there have been drownings around the barrier islands many times over the years, hundreds of times over the years. Brian Prasher of the United Cajun Navy told CNN the beach was packed with boats and people that day, some of them drinking, and that rip currents would have been a real risk to anybody in the water. The autopsy happened on July 7th at the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office Coast Lab. Around 2 that afternoon, Lynn confirmed through dental records that the body was Nolan. And just before 2, the family retained Crump. Just after 3:30, the sheriff's office put out a release asking for original photos, video, and eyewitness accounts from Horn Island on July 4th. It used a specific phrase. It asked for material depicting alleged altercations. I'd ask for material depicting him at all, not just alleged altercations, anything. Altercations, hugs, happiness, anything that he's in is what you'd want, not just something that fits your own narrative. That phrase launched into a video that is already making the rounds. At the July 10th news conference in Harlem, Crump said the video caught Nolan demanding his phone back, asking how he knew it was Nolan's phone. Crump said multiple people identified it. And then on July 13th in Good Morning America, Trayston Shepherd said the voice was his own. He said Nolan isn't in the video at all. He said the confrontation was between him and a stranger who started something with him, and that he was yelling at people, holding him back on the boat to let him off so he could keep going. Rolling Stone reported that two other people backed his account. When you jump on information that's not verified and say, see, this is what it is, and it turns out that's not what it is, you look kind of like an idiot. But sometimes people already are going on their narrative route, and then if it's not fitting the narrative, you just stick with your narrative and go, see, this is fact. I'm here to say, I don't know. But I am here to say there's two sides to that too. Not just what one is going to tell you. One that fear appears to be fairly hijacked with a very specific motive and a very specific narrative that they want out there. And it's not necessarily the family themselves. I'd say it's some of the folks that have surrounded the family and are using them as a podium for their own agenda and attention. That's one video. There have been others. A photo of an alleged pool party went around and got reposted by Crump's own account. Shepherd told Rolling Stone that party happened on June 27th. Asked about it, Crump said reposting something isn't the same as authenticating it. WLOX has reported that AI-generated photos and video tied to the case are circulating too. So somewhere out there, people are manufacturing fake images of a dead 18-year-old and feeding them into an open investigation, and every one of those artifacts gets swallowed whole by somebody who already decides how this ends. The pressure has gone somewhere ugly. Ashley Cole posted screenshots of death threats aimed at her family and said she deactivated her Facebook account out of fear for her children's safety. Shepherd told ABC News that he and other friends who were on the island have been threatened too. The FBI told ABC it's working to address interstate threats received by people connected to the case. Nobody in this story has been charged with anything. Sheriff John Ledbetter says his office has interviewed more than 60 witnesses, including the three friends who were on the boat with Nolan. He confirmed the FBI is helping examine digital evidence and noted that isn't unusual. Since Horn Island sits on federal land, FBI Jackson has said the sheriff's office is leading the investigation and will keep leading it. On July 15th, the family and their attorneys met with Jackson County District Attorney Angel Myers McElarth. Crump said afterward that the case goes to a grand jury once the sheriff's investigation is finished. The district attorney's office has said convening a grand jury doesn't imply criminality, that it's standard procedure for most unnatural or suspicious deaths in that county. Nolan's phone has its own subplot. Crump's team took possession of it for what he called a speedy independent examination. Ledbetter told ABC News that Crump hadn't turned the phone over to his investigators. After the meeting with the district attorney, both sides agreed to a mutual inspection. Crump's experts and the county's experts working on the same device. The single most important object in this case is a dead kid's cell phone, and it's now spent weeks as a negotiation. That's an enormous amount of activity. It's produced no cause of death and no manner of death. The state medical examiner's findings sat behind toxicology testing, which does routinely run weeks. The independent autopsy in Washington, D.C., which Crum said Colin Kaepernick helped fund, was announced as imminent as July 10th, delayed over transport problems, then described as coming very soon on July 11th. More than 60 witnesses, federal help, two autopsies, wall-to-wall national coverage, not one released finding about how an 18-year-old ended up in that water, but everybody's got their story and they say they know what happened. I'm telling you, we don't. We don't as of right now. And there are a lot of sides to this, and every single one of them deserves investigation, a voice, and to be heard. There are two categories of material in this case, and they don't weigh the same. The first one is verifiable. A boat left a dock at 9:56. It arrived at 11:14. A distress call went out around 4. The boat left at 4:31. A park ranger found a body in the water at 8:45 on a Monday morning. Those things happened, and no amount of arguing moves them. The second category is everything stacked on top of that, and it's all conjecture. Does the young woman's account hold up, or do the three young men's? Is a phone on the dashboard normal or sinister? Does an empty Snapchat mean somebody deleted something or that nobody was posting? Does a body surfacing Monday instead of Sunday mean a current or something worse? Some of those questions get well-informed guesses. They're all still guesses. My read is worth exactly what yours is worth, which isn't much, because neither one of us was standing on that sandbar. The people making AI images don't know more. The people who decided on day one that this was a racially motivated killing in Mississippi don't know more. Neither do the people who decided on day one that it was a simple drowning and the families being used. Nobody arguing about this online knows more than a sheriff who's interviewed 60 witnesses and can't tell you how this young man died. One group knows more. And it's a small group. It's whoever stood within eyesight of Nolan Wells between 3 o'clock and 4:31 that afternoon, if there was anybody watching him. Some of those people have talked to investigators. Mississippi Today reported that others are afraid to, worry that giving a statement drops them under a microscope or into the internet. Given the threats flying around, that fear tracks. It's also the exact reason that ours stays blank. Nolan's parents have told a story about him from when he was a toddler. They were in the middle of an argument, and he ran into a room in a diaper and started dancing until they quit. His father put the family rule plainly. If you go with 5, you come back with 5. His high school coach said his character spoke louder than his accomplishments. His mother said he never met a stranger that he didn't like. She asked people planning to demonstrate on his behalf to keep it peaceful, because that's what he would have wanted. He didn't like fights. He didn't even like arguments. And now look what's happened all around him. His funeral was set for July 20th at Center Point Church in Ocean Springs, the visitation from 9 to 11, a celebration of life afterward at the Jackson County Fairgrounds. That would be happening as I'm literally recording this. Crum said Al Sharpton agreed to officiate and that Tyler Perry covered the cost, and his mother said the rest of it, but as plainly as it can be said, this is not how she wanted the world to meet her son. I'm not sure her son would want the same introduction either. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. I'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.